Hi, I'm Shadow Stevens. While I'm doing this and that and the other thing at the very same time, I'm having a great time on The Jeremiah Show, the greatest show in the history of the world. For the love of God, subscribe. No, seriously, subscribe.
It's The Jeremiah Show. Tearing back the curtain on the hospitality, music, and entertainment industry with insider tips and the hottest global guests in the biz. With Dr. D and special LA personal development commentator Mike Gormley. He's a restaurant and bar fixture, a partner with legendary rock star drummer Mick Fleetwood in Fleetwood's on Front Street in Maui, and he's your radio host. And now, from a race around the sun, Jeremiah Higgins.
Welcome to the Jeremiah Show. Dr. D, how you doing today?
Well,
guess what? I forgot my mic screen, windscreen. I hope there's no wind coming through.
No wind until I open the window.
Yeah. Let's see, what's the check the barometer or the what is that? You know, that where you swirl the little thing.
Oh, that's the that's a
what the wind speed is.
Wind speed, yeah. They also have the socks out at the airport.
Uh-huh.
I
do have a sock on my head. That might work.
That would work. Yeah.
To get a windstorm.
Yeah. It's more like
dust.
A stocking for a burglary.
But for my microphone, it's just out of luck. No windscreen mic. Sorry about that.
No wind.
I'm forgetful. I need a checklist like an
airline
pilot.
Yeah, and we'll sanitize that thing really, really well. You go ahead and raise that up a little bit. Go ahead and move that up so that there's no noise. There you go. Perfect. There you go.
Now, it looks so different without a windsock.
I hear you. Well, I'll tell you what. During the first break, I'm going to let you go get that, and we'll continue on.
We
but
do need a
nobody
checklist.
Has to
Maybe
know.
On this plexiglass, I could have like a pilot's checklist.
Get a little, get one of those whiteboard writers.
Yeah, just say windsock.
Yeah.
Check.
Or better yet, and then of course you can also do your mathematical equations. You remember those movies
in my downtime.
Yeah, exactly.
In between, the breaks here. but also, the number one would probably be windscreen. Number two would be check to Richard.
That's right.
Don't forget the money.
I like that. I like that second one. I wouldn't mind, honestly, if it was third or fourth, as long as it's there. Okay.
As long as
I don't care.
Just somewhere
if it's
on the board.
10, I don't care.
Just make sure it's on the board.
It's on the board.
That's what usually
somewhere down on the bottom.
Just
there.
Like a good basketball game. Just get it on the board.
Just get it on the board. Get it in the
on the board.
Get the numbers, even from 3-point. 3-point land. Do we ever do 3-pointers on this show?
I thought that's all it is.
I will
net.
I will. I think some of your guests are 3-pointers. I got to tell you.
Oh my God! Yeah.
Some of the people we've had on this program last year, and now here we are in 2021 land. Blackjack, I win. It's
that's your new.
That's my new slogan for this year.
Slogan.
Blackjack, I win.
Blackjack.
We have an interesting program today, and it's tied into, of course. Obviously, and I'm trying to avoid those words we talked about last year at the end of the year.
Adele?
No, not Adele. No, I'm talking about the thing that everybody has to do other things in order to be able to function in society right now that eventually will go away and we'll get back
pandemic.
To. Totally, we'll go back to whatever that used to be back before March. Of 2020.
Life as we knew it.
Yeah, but see, I'm trying not to use those
words.
Would
you want all of your old life back? That's a question for everyone out there. What 2020, would you want it all back the same, or would you change anything?
You know, I think I wouldn't even look at it from that perspective. My perspective is that it's going to be what it's going to be, and I'm good with that. Okay, that's my perspective, that however it turns out.
You roll with it, Richard.
I really do. And of course, I've said this before, that I was thrilled that they decided to do what they did from the standpoint that every other time we've had a virus in spite of, or influenza, for example, and even though we've had the flu shot for I don't know how many decades, we still did nothing else other than that. Right, we didn't stop moving around. We didn't stop kids from going to school with the flu. We didn't stop going to work with the flu. And then we spread it around and it makes its cycle and then it goes away. This time, in spite of all of the dangers and the fact that we knew very little about it and we had no vaccine, we did something different. And I know that a lot of people didn't like it. They don't like it. But the reality is, when we come out of the other side, which we will, it's going to be different. Now, we don't like the way it is now, but I actually think it's going to be better. I mean, you and I talked, for example, you know, how about the level of sanitization, I guess you'd call it, sanitizing your workspace, like the restaurants and the mm-hmm. hospitality industry. That should have been going on long before. Not that it would have prevented the virus, but don't you, I mean, you and I, you even agreed. They should have been cleaning at this level. They were down here, and now they're up here. And hopefully it stays there.
Well, I think it depends on the restaurant, the operator, the hotel,
sure.
the, you know, the group, the business owner. But
wouldn't you rather have a cleaner place?
Yeah, but I do. I've said that, yeah, that I think one of the great things, if you can call it that, great things that have come out is that restaurants, hotels, they've some of them have really improved on, most of them have really improved on their sanitation
yeah.
programs. We all benefit from that.
Exactly.
We have
exactly.
a really special show today. It is a serious topic, but we want to take some time and explore it a little bit. Tom Colicchio, you're familiar with him. He's mm-hmm. on Top Chef, one of mm-hmm. the hosts of Top Chef with mm-hmm. Padma. So we work with Top Chef last season. We brought on a lot of the chef contestants on Top Chef and brought them on the show and interviewed them. As far as I know, the new season hasn't been introduced, but Tom Colicchio also is a really talented chef and owns many, many restaurants from New York to California. He and other celebrity chefs, other well-known restaurateurs joined together because they had to. And put together the Independent Restaurant Coalition
mm-hmm.
to help save restaurants.
Yeah.
And I'm going to mention it throughout the show. I'd like, at the beginning here, I want my agenda to be very clear to our great listeners out there. If you like the show, if you love to eat, if you love restaurants, I think that might include all of you.
I think so.
Please go to saverestaurants.com and sign up. It honestly takes less time to do that than me finishing my sentence here. It's really a click, click, click. It sends a letter to your congressperson, and it sends out a message that we need some help here in the restaurant business, and I'm going to tell you why. This is not a depressing show. This is not going to be statistics and numbers to make you feel bad. It's meant to be hopeful. It's meant to help. We really have an army of listeners out there for, mm-hmm. for the Jeremiah Show, and I want to see if you guys can help us out. I know you listen, you tune in, but take 2 seconds, please. Go to saverestaurants.com and join in. We also have Marcus Lemonis. He is on the MSNBC hit show, The Prophet. Both of these gentlemen, Marcus lives in Santa Barbara. I'm not sure about Tom. Both of them have invites and have responded and will be coming on the Jeremiah Show in the future. Well, in the meantime, though, I want to showcase a few interviews, a few sound bites from these gentlemen that really, really summed up what we're going through, what the industry is going through, and how you can help. So let's start, Dr. D, if we could, with Tom Colicchio's. He's on the Bill Maher show, mm-hmm. or Bill Maher Real Time.
Real Time, yeah, with Bill Maher.
With Bill Maher, and one of my favorite guys, comedian. So here's that sound clip.
That our margins are slim. Well, our margins are slim because 95 cents for every dollar we take in goes out the door. And so if you really want to actually take stimulus dollars and put it through an entity that actually will spend that money, we're not going to buy back our stocks with this. You know, we're not going to give, you know, our right. executives bonuses. That money is going out the door into the economies.
I think that's very reasonable for an industry that involves 20 million Americans to ask for a bailout. And I would also just say in conclusion, I don't know if people really understand how much restaurants are vital to the lifeblood of civilization. Civilizations happen because of cities, and cities don't really exist on a cultural level without restaurants. People need to sit together. I mean, we're not exactly a cafe society. Europe is more, but we still do need to sit and break bread and talk with each other. And when I hear about fabled restaurants going out of business, you know, Swingers went out of business. Well, the first one here, I don't know if you know Swingers. It's a diner. It's the movie Swingers. John Favreau's great movie.
Yeah.
It's where Quentin Tarantino wrote every one of his scripts sitting at that diner bar there. And You know, I just don't know if people understand how much we are losing cultural-wise.
So two when things restaurants I wanted to comment on that. When the restaurants have gone down to, let's say, a patio, dining only and takeout, you know, maybe it's and maybe 25%, which is the maximum we, in 2020, the max, maximum capacity that restaurants were allowed were indoors was 25%.
Yeah.
Everyone was able to build or allowed to build parklets, which are basically patios, enclosed, and you know, a lot of them are plywood and a couple plants on the patio. But most of those cost each restaurant owner about $25,000. Yeah. Okay, so you've lost all your business. Now you need to come up with $25,000 to continue your business. Tom talked about the margins. You know, 95% of all that money goes back out the door. It just shows the margins are very, very tight. I mean, the national average in 2018 was 3% on the dollar profit. The national average in 2019 was 6 cents on the dollar. Tom's quoting 5 cents on the dollar. It's just so now you lose most of that business. You can't play that overhead, and you can't bring in those and the employees, vendors. I mean, think of all the people that affects from the food drivers to the farmers to the truckers to the, you know, all the way down the line.
Linen service
and all the different things in your direct operating.
You know, and the one thing that really boggles my mind is they were willing in 2008, 2009 to bail out Enron and IGA and several other major, too big to fail corporations, global corporations. And yet they refuse to do anything I bet you it would cost less to bail out the restaurants across this country than it did to bail out those corporations 13 years ago.
Yeah,
I mean, what's the deal?
And that's what we're trying to pass is at the Independent Restaurant Coalition is and the restaurant owners out there. Again, go to saverestaurants.com. One click, you can really, really help out.
Yeah.
Restaurant CARES Act. So, you know, to help fund and get the restaurants through these darker days here. Yeah.
You have another sound clip
from
Tom?
Well, the second thing I wanted to comment on is really think about your town. Restaurants are, when they say it's the lifeblood, I mean, college student, so many people work in the restaurant industry throughout their lives, and most have worked in a restaurant, but it's also the gathering place. I mean, think back to some of your best memories. They probably have your favorite restaurant and your restaurant owners, your restaurant employees involved in some way, in some part of that memory. I mean, Dr. D, how about you? You know, What were a couple of your favorite restaurants here in town, and why was that? Did you go for special occasions? Did you meet friends? Did you meet your wife there? I mean, you and I used to go to Durf's after we'd finished the show.
Exactly.
To have a burger and a beer. I mean, that was a lot of fun.
It was
a great time the show to unwind and talk about it.
We used to go to, my wife and I, we'd go to Tee Off and have the prime
great
rib
place.
Or what have you. We even went, and this obviously was before March of 2020. We went with her nephew and niece-in-law to Tee Off. We liked going to, the barbecue place there on Hollister, just past the railroad tracks. The name escapes me. I should know it because I did a commercial for them. But also the Dutch restaurant that closed, that now apparently is still going to reopen sometime soon, if it hasn't already. Several of other Chili's
Let's go to Tee Off, though. Go back to Tee Off. Why did you and your wife meet there? That was the first thing that came to your mind.
We wouldn't meet there. We would go there together. We went there for dinner.
Why would you choose that place?
She was more familiar with the restaurants here than I, obviously, when we moved here. So that was one of the places that we would go to. We like their prime rib.
And the Tee Off is it almost reminds me of a dive bar / restaurant kind of something from New York where it's tucked into this little strip mall.
Right.
Dark. It's cozy.
Exactly.
Candlelit tables. Waiters with experience.
Several restaurants like that in Phoenix. One of them was called the Beef Eaters. Okay. And it had those leather chair or the vinyl seats, the booths.
High back booths,
high back chairs. It was a very, it wasn't high end dining, but it looked very elegant, very medieval in a lot of the instances because they had a lot of wood. And they would roll out to your table the prime rib roast and carve it right there in front of you, which was so cool. Now, they don't do that at Tioff, but still, that was the reason, one of the reasons why. There was another one called Durant's in Phoenix. Also
famous.
Similar.
Right? Yeah. Famous restaurant.
Exactly. Yeah. And they had the same kind of booths, nice and cushiony and, you know. And
everything
Harry's,
facing the
Harry's,
door just in case some the mob came in and tried to take you out. Your back was
to
the wall.
Your back was to the wall. Exactly. Exactly.
That's the way they used to design all those old restaurants.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yes. The gangsters. Yeah. You know, those were the kind of restaurants that have really liked. Farmer Boys is another one, you know, that we've tried. It's been a while since
I've been there. How many years? Farmer Boys is there for so long.
I know.
Farmer Boys Coffee.
It's changing. It has changed ownership a couple of times, even once since I've been here, as well as Harry's. That's another one of those like the Tioff, like Durant's, like Beef Eaters in Phoenix and so forth. And those are really, really cool. Been a Chase.
Yeah.
In Midtown or downtown Santa Barbara. Yep. Very nice place. Yep.
I love those places with a little bar you can just kind of tuck
just
into the bar.
In, sit
or
down
if you
at
got
the
a
bar.
Day, you can tuck into the booth and kind of just let the experience wash over you. Let all your worries leave them all at the door, let them all go away.
Exactly. Exactly.
And after you get through that bottom of that first martini, they're definitely long gone.
Yeah.
Let's hear from Tom here. What's he got to say?
And you're right. Restaurants have become a part of culture. And these are the places that we're going to need to go to feel normal when we get through this on the other side of this. Places that you're going to celebrate birthdays and anniversaries. Places where you're going to go to actually hang out with your friends, grab a drink, a bottle of wine, some great food, and feel normal again. And this is what we need to get back to. And, you know, Bill, I'm hoping that the silver lining here, if there is a silver lining, is that maybe we're going to have a more empathetic country. You know, for years, you know, as you know, I'm an anti-hunger advocate. And right now, going into COVID, pre-COVID, there's about 38 million Americans on food stamps or SNAP. Right now, the estimate is that there's an increase for about 70%. So we're looking at another 25 million people. So after this, what do we aspire to get back to? 38 million? No, we could do better than that. And what I'm hoping is that the demonization of people who need help, saying they need to pull themselves up by the bootstraps and they make poor decisions and why are they having kids and all of that we've heard, sort of blaming those people. The average American now, who's lost their job for no fault of their own. Now they're struggling. And they're the ones who are now lining up for food at food pantries. And they're the ones who are filling out those applications for SNAP. Maybe now we'll have a better and deeper empathy for people who, for no fault of their own, were born into poverty or had a bad break and they need to get out of it. And hopefully now we're going to see a more empathetic country on the other side of this. That's what I'm hoping for. And also, I'm hoping that we see, because of these comorbidities revolve around food, diabetes and obesity and things like that, hopefully, on the other side of this, we'll understand that proper nutrition and good food actually will keep people healthier and keep people from dying when the next pandemic comes around.
What I've been preaching every week here is what I've been trying to get across. Beautifully said. Great to see you. Dine with you in person soon.
Tom talked about if there's a silver lining in this, that maybe the stigma for people that need food shortages, different times in their lives when they need help.
Yeah.
Maybe that will go away. And I wanted to play that clip because it reminded me, my family moved around a lot, as you know, 11 different schools, 12 years. And we lived up in Idaho, and some of these states, my dad was a general contractor in the construction business, hardest worker I've ever known. Mm-hmm. But he, you know, through no fault of his own, sometimes with the winters, the long winters, there was no construction. There was no work out there. So I do remember moving to Idaho our first year and at Christmas not having enough food. Mm. And someone... I don't know who they were, but someone dropped off a turkey on our porch, and it totally changed the whole house, the whole feeling of the house for Christmas. Everyone was happy, and this was because We had food. We had this, someone had dropped us off, someone had cared. And I don't care who you are out there. Look at these lines right now for people trying to pick up food.
Amazing.
There's nothing wrong with that.
And
help the neighbor. I mean, that's what we're all here for.
But you look at that and you go, this is America?
Yeah, that is true.
By the way, it wasn't Les Nessman who dropped that turkey off, was it?
Les Nessman, no. That would have come through the ceiling because he drops them out of helicopters. We'll be right back after the short break.
Call the cops and I'll show up at your door. My cuffs. Call for help, play them, you want nothing's gonna save you now.
My name's Danny Trejo, and you're listening to The Jeremiah Show. And on it, I'm talking about my cookbook. It's awesome. Hey, I got a documentary coming out and dropped a record called Satisfy My Soul. Check it out. Trejo's music. Jeremiah, you're loved, Holmes.
Neighborhood restaurants are the lifeblood of our communities. They are where we come together and make lifelong memories. And right now, they are facing extinction. The COVID-19 crisis threatens to permanently close 85% of independent restaurants. 16 million people risk losing their jobs, disproportionately impacting people of color and single mothers. They are our friends, our neighbors, our farmers, our bartenders, our family. One in four people who lost their jobs during the pandemic were restaurant workers. Without your help, our favorite places to eat will be gone forever. Tell Congress to pass the Restaurants Act now. Visit SaveRestaurants.com.
Welcome back to the Jeremiah Show. Stop what you're doing. Take a second for me, please.
You want me to stop what I'm doing? Shut everything down?
No, actually, you just go to your computer real quick. Sign up. Let's see if Richard can do it here. If Dr. D can do it, anybody can do it.
That, you're right. You are absolutely right. If Dr. D can do it,
anybody. Follow the leader. We're going to follow Dr. D.
Where am I going?
SaveRestaurants.com. Okay, while he's doing that, I'm going to keep moving on here.
Please.
Let's play, if you don't mind, Dr. D, from MSNBC.
There it is.
Just
go ahead.
Clip there, if you don't mind.
Go ahead. We'll play
while we're playing this clip, Dr. D's going to sign.
That's right.
All you have to do is hit sign, click, and you're in.
I'll do that during the piece.
Okay.
Benji, let's start with our reporting. The deal lawmakers are working on right now includes targeted relief for live theater venues, music venues, museums, but not restaurants. Why is that?
Well, the argument from the people crafting the deal is that restaurants will be helped, but they'd be helped through the existing PPP program, which is the set of loans that were given to businesses of all kinds of industries to help tide them through the pandemic initially. Now, that the money for that dried up months ago, which is why there's been a lot of pressure to reauthorize it. But restaurants argue it doesn't meet their needs. A group called the Independent Restaurant Coalition, which consists of a lot of prominent chefs and restaurateurs, have been arguing that its requirements to spend a certain amount on payroll and its schedule for paying it back and its requirements to have it turn into a forgivable loan as opposed to a loan that has to be paid back later are a little too onerous and difficult for them to meet. They would rather pass the Restaurants Act, a bill that would effectively just reimburse them for their losses for the year and allow them to spend it as they see fit. And they argue it's necessary because they're different than other industries. They faced stricter health regulations. We're now seeing major cities like New York closing indoor dining or other cities closing bars entirely. They feel that they should be given the treatment that, say, you know, live theaters have as something that's just uniquely affected by the pandemic and needs unique help to survive.
Okay, that was a very interesting. And I found the website.
Hey, and
yeah, I'm there. I've signed up. I, you know, it's not that hard. Your first name, your last name, your zip code, an email address.
What's great, it will send
Marcus, you help. You know,
it adds to the list of.
Yeah, and I just joined. I just clicked join, and boom, I'm done. And that's a good thing. That's a very good thing.
So let's go to Marcus Lemonis, his comment here on the restaurant industry. He does have a few restaurants, and in fact, out on Coast Village Road, he has a retail shop.
Okay, here you go.
Marcus, you help all sorts of small businesses. Does the restaurant industry have an argument here that PPP, while it may help generally small businesses, it doesn't do much for them?
Well, let me start by telling you that I have the benefit of not being a journalist and not being a politician. So I'm going to give you the sobering reality that this is a very big problem right now. And that the number of restaurants I think that you're calculating at 110,000 is underestimated. I was in Youngstown, Ohio yesterday. I'm in Chicago today. And the number of storefronts that are going to be permanently closed is much bigger. I think the restaurant owners are asking for something very realistic. And the PPP process, as you know, Stephanie and Benji, was not an easy one. And what these restaurant owners don't want to do is have to figure out how to jump through hoops while they're keeping their doors open.
That's so true.
They have to jump through enough hoops already just to function, period.
Right.
I mean, between payroll, between what we mentioned before about the delivery of linens and food.
Rent.
Rent.
Covering the rent. I mean,
utilities, et cetera, employees and the turnover there, which we know is.
The stress.
Yeah.
And
now you got to go through that hoop.
Yeah.
Why can't you just pass a stimulus package for restaurants, for hospitality industry, because. You know, they talk about reviving the economy. Well, because restaurants and the hospitality industry, which you represent on this program, are part of the tourist industry of a lot of communities across this country. If they aren't there, how do you resurrect your tourism?
Well, it's interesting you say that because one of my favorite places to go. I know there's not many that are going to agree with me on this, but I like to get away to LA and go to restaurants and
yeah.
go check out great restaurants.
Uh-huh.
There's no point. So how many people have not gone to Santa Barbara? I mean, we are a real destination from around the world for people. And if there aren't restaurants, if there aren't hotels, if there aren't businesses open and you can't, I mean, there's so many reasons to not travel right now, and really, I don't think anyone should.
Oh, absolutely,
unless you need to.
Yeah,
but I mean, think about it. when things do reopen and there are no restaurants, there are no reasons to visit a town or to make a trip.
Exactly,
because everything's been shuttered and closed.
And then what's going to happen to that town?
Yep.
What's going to happen? I mean, it's one thing when you have a town like Paradise that gets burned out by a wildfire, and they're starting over. It's another thing when a town is burned out by an economic collapse because its hospitality industry has been unsupported, not by its community, but by the very government that it pays taxes to, both state and federal. You know, you're losing. You're losing
all the tax dollars we've lost in Santa Barbara.
Yeah.
It just continues to, to domino
effect.
It's just
crazy, yeah.
Our nation, 500,000 local independent restaurants anchor our communities, as we're talking about. They drive domestic and international tourism. They invigorate development in every corner of the U.S. Restaurants directly employ over 11 million people across the country and indirectly support 5 million more workers up and down the supply chain. So just think about a couple of them. Restaurants support growers, packers, fishermen, vintners, butchers, bakers.
Candlestick makers.
Yes, in some instances.
Yes, exactly.
In my restaurants, yes. Yeah. Candlestick makers, we definitely support them. I love candles. And millions of other small businesses that depend on the restaurants and exactly. bars in our town.
Exactly. It is... It's
collectively...
unconscionable.
Yeah. I mean, individually, we're small.
Yeah.
But collectively, restaurants, the collective impact is immense.
Yeah.
It contributes 700 restaurants alone. Contribute, independent restaurants, I should say, alone. Contribute $760 billion sales to the economy annually. Do we need to take a break? Mm-hmm. Is that what that look was for?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we're going to do that. We're going to do that and let that sink in a little bit. While we're at break, do me a favor. Mm-hmm. Go to saverestaurants.com and just sign up. Richard, Dr. D here did it while he was producing this show.
It's like he said, I can do it, anybody
can
do it.
He's got octopus hands over there. He's pushing buttons. He's moving his mic. He's working video, and he signed up for the Independent Restaurant Coalition, and so can you. It's called saverestaurants.com.
And during the break, I'll remove my suction cups from the console.
my teacher, the octopus.
Hey, it's Tim Stack here, and I just did the Jeremiah Show and had a really, really great time. Check me out at TV's Tim Stack on Twitter.
For me, on top of the labor force being in trouble, is the commercial real estate market that will be severely wrecked by this process. Now, these lawmakers that know that this is the right thing to do probably don't have family members that own restaurants and don't understand the severity of this. Getting takeout is great and it's subsidizing things, but this will be catastrophic if not solved very quickly.
Getting takeout doesn't help restaurants, especially in cities where rent is the biggest expense.
No, it doesn't. It doesn't take all the pain away, but it does help. I got to correct her on that one. I think it does help to order takeout. The problem is let's say you've got rent of, you know, on average here in Santa Barbara, most of the restaurants I've set up are lowest at about $6,000 a month and typically about $12,000 to $18,000 a month. So now tell me, if you're bringing in on takeout average, and I know these are the numbers here in Santa Barbara. I've talked to a lot of people that are doing takeout in restaurants, old clients and friends in the business. They're averaging about from $500 a day to, you know, $1,100, $1,200 bucks a day on, you know, through the weekday.
Yeah.
If they're lucky. Now you add that up when you add buying the food at a 30% cost, payroll at a, you know, with employee benefits at a 32% cost. You add that rent in there. You add all the things that are required to keep open. You're really upside down. You're in the red.
Oh, yeah.
And so all you're doing is really, you're trying to save your business, but your ship's upside down and yeah, you're going to be paying off that debt that you're accumulating right now, probably 2 to 3 years from now. Yeah. If you can make it. A lot of vendors won't drop now without cash. So
not even treading water.
No, it's sad. So, and that was Marcus Lemonis on MSNBC.
Mm-hmm.
Mentioned commercial real estate. So there's another component to this that will be devastated. Look at State Street right now. I walked down State Street, about 6 blocks of State Street. It'd be 3 closed, 1 open, 6 closed, 1 open. Commercial real estate signage in the window for... It looks like an old West, Santa Barbara. I didn't recognize it. It looks like the old Western, you know, like this old town, like tumbleweed should be blowing through.
They're not too far off, unfortunately. Yeah.
And so it's affecting the, you know, the commercial real estate
market.
It
really is.
Then can you help us understand this, Marcus? How come industries like airlines get a carve out? An airline CEO, he or she is going to get his big paycheck, win, lose, or draw. Many of their employees are protected by unions. A restaurant owner could lose everything. Busboys, servers, bartenders, they won't be able to put food on their table if they don't have those jobs. Why wouldn't you look to an industry like the restaurant business and instead go with airlines? Can you help us understand that?
Yeah, I think we have to separate a picking sides, right? It's either the restaurants or the airlines. I think they're separate issues. As an economy, we need the infrastructure for air travel, for business travel, and things of that nature. So let's put that off to the side. The reality of it is when you look at the waterfall of businesses that are most affected by this pandemic and the necessity to shut down to put people over profits, which I think everybody agrees with, you look at restaurants and gyms and salons and personal services, and they're the most deeply impacted. I don't know why the government doesn't really understand this process. And I'm kind of tired of hearing that local cities and states are too cash strapped to solve this problem, because the collateral damage to their tourism will also be affected. I'm not going to go to a particular town, even if I want to see things, if I don't feel like my family can get a meal. And so I think there's a much bigger collateral effect here than anybody's really calculated.
People move to an adorable town in the suburbs because you just love that cute downtown. You won't love it when that cute downtown is all boarded up. Benji, before we go, any chance the restaurant bill could get added to the next stimulus package? It's not signed yet.
Go to saverestaurants.com. We'll be right back.
Breathing and moving are you. Soothing away all the pain in life, holding you down. bone breaks and heals, oh, but heartaches can kill from the inside, so it seems. Oh, I'm telling you, it's all a dream. It's all a dream. It's all a dream.
Hi, I'm Brooke Williamson, Top Chef Season 14 winner, and you're listening to The Jeremiah Show, so don't go away.
You're listening to The Jeremiah Show with Dr. D. Find all of our past shows on iTunes, podcasts, The Jeremiah Show.
Neighborhood restaurants are the lifeblood of our communities. They are where we come together and make lifelong memories. And right now, they are facing extinction. The COVID-19 crisis threatens to permanently close 85% of independent restaurants. 16 million people risk losing their jobs, disproportionately impacting people of color and single mothers. They are our friends, our neighbors, our farmers, our bartenders, our family. One in four people who lost their jobs during the pandemic were restaurant workers. Without your help, our favorite places to eat will be gone forever. Tell Congress to pass the Restaurants Act now. Visit SaveRestaurants.com.
Pennies in a stream, fallen leaves of sycamore, moonlight in Vermont, I see finger waves. Ski trails on a mountainside, snow light in Vermont.
Welcome back to The Jeremiah Show. Just take a moment here while you're listening to the final segment of the show and go to SaveRestaurants.com, please. It's really 30-second to sign up.
Oh, it's not even that long.
And it really does help.
If you type the right name in, SaveRestaurants.com. Yeah.
Make sure you spell your name right.
Please. Spell your name right. Hit your zip code, hit your email, and then hit the join button. That's all.
That's very easy. Very easy. Dr. D was actually, he was a stuntman on the show. He actually went through, he was our Save Restaurant stuntman. He actually did it.
And there was only one hoop I had to jump through.
You didn't even hurt yourself.
No.
The comment before the program, before the last segment with Marcus Lemonis, I agree, you know, we got to separate restaurants and small businesses from airlines. But I do want to make a comment looking at December and you know, when they shut down all restaurants completely in California here, and the restaurant owners that we love, Suzanne Goen, Caroline Stein, Sherry Venezuela here in town with Acme, and Michael DeRusse, and all these people that are running and operating restaurants out there that are getting hurt. Why could you pack in on an airline 2 inches from someone you don't know, a companion, a fellow passenger, pack into these airlines and breathe this recycled air and fly, and but yet the restaurants are just completely shut down. It just doesn't make any sense to me.
Yeah,
let's play this last clip, Dr. D. Thank you so much.
Well, it sounds like there's not a lot of chance for this particular deal. I reached out to Susan Collins' office, who is one of the bipartisan negotiators, and they sounded pretty opposed to the Restaurants Act in general on principle, not just in terms of having the amount of money in the deal. Their concern is that it doesn't have enough requirements to hire workers and keep them on payroll, even if business is down at a restaurant, which is one of the key requirements of PPP. In a little bit of pushback to some of the more prominent advocates for the Restaurants Act, a spokeswoman for Susan Collins said that they could imagine a celebrity chef, for example, getting a grant at their restaurant and not using it to hire back workers. So there is definitely some opposition internally to this.
So there's opposition internally. Let's change their minds. Yeah. Please go to saverestaurants.com and and thank you. I appreciate it because I'd love to see you at the bar or the restaurant maybe
Absolutely.
Later this fall.
Me too.
All right. That's our show. Communicate. Listen more and evolve.
Brani, and you are listening to the Jeremiah Show on AM 1290 KZSB Santa Barbara. Listen, man.
Welcome to the Jeremiah Show. Dr. D, how you doing today? Guess what? I forgot my mic screen, windscreen. I hope there's no wind coming through.
No window.
Yeah. Let's see. What's the check the barometer or that? What swirl the little thing?
Oh, that's the that's a
tell
wind.
The wind speed is.
I also have the socks out at the airport.
Uh-huh. I do have a sock on my.
That would work, yeah.
To get a windstorm.
Yeah. It's more like
dust.
A stocking for a burglary.
But other microphones, they're just out of luck. No windscreen mic. Sorry about that.
No wind. And of course, you could.
Need a checklist like an air.
We'll
do it. Pirate.
Yeah, and we'll sanitize that thing really, really well. You go ahead and raise that up a little bit. Go ahead so that there's no noise. There you go. Perfect.
It's so different.
I hear you. Well, I'll tell you what. During the first break, I'm going to let you go get that. And we'll continue on.
Maybe on this plexiglass, I could have like a pilot's checklist.
Get a little, or better yet, you know. And then, of course, you can also do equations. You remember those?
And so my dad.
Red and yellow would be on fire, and the clouds would catch the colors of red and yellow.
Would be on fire, and the clouds would catch the colors of red. They were beautiful. The most beautiful sky has ever.